The next chapter in the Karma Yoga of Swami Vivekananda is duty. One of the most difficult things in this world for us to understand is what is our duty. As Bengali people are very fond of cricket and football, and they also go to this writer's building to do their work. But whenever there is this football match or cricket game, then they say our work is our play and our game is our duty. What's duty? It's very peculiar that to give an objective definition of what is a duty is almost an impossible thing. Most of the miseries that we undergo and we create for others is because we do not know what is our duty. To put it simply, what is duty? That which we have to do, and if we do not do, it brings great misery, at least for ourselves. That's our duty. But then, how do we understand that what is to be done by us? One easy way, but of course it is not that easy, one easy way is to find out, to examine our conscience and say, that, am I feeling joyful? Am I feeling fulfilled? You know, when we do not do certain things, we feel a prick, a dissatisfaction. To give you a few examples, suppose a student neglects his duty, which is, what is the duty of a student? To study. Suppose he neglects, and the inevitable result when it comes, afterwards he may say, oh, it is bad luck, but inside him he knows that he had deliberately neglected to do his best. Suppose someone is cooking, but friends are trying to gossip. There was a man, and he returned from the hospital, and he got a phone call that three of his doctor friends, they wanted to play bridge, and one was needed. So he said, I am coming immediately. So his wife asked, is it very urgent? Absolutely. There are already three doctors there. So supposing, you are trying to cook, and if you do not pay attention to it, then it won't come out properly. But you see, there is something within us which tells, I ought to have done better. A devotee of God, suppose he knows what is to be done. You see, he reads Bible, reads Gospel, reads Gita, and he knows very clearly what is to be done. But he doesn't do it for whatever reason, and he feels the prick. This is what is called, I am a sinner. You know, there are so many old saints, they use, especially Christian saints and Vaishnavas, say, we are great sinners. So what is the sin? If you examine their lives, you do not find that they are murdering somebody, raping somebody, stealing somebody. No. Then why do they go on shouting? After all, you see, sometimes some of these Christian saints, they used to live in deserts. And even if he wants to kill somebody, there is nobody around. And yet he goes on, beating his forehead, I am a great sinner, I am a great sinner. What does he mean? He means, I ought to give my whole heart to you, O Lord, but still something is pulling me back. He knows a monk is one who has dedicated his whole life to God. Do you know that? In Sanskrit, the word for a monk is sannyasi. Sannyasa. Nyasa is a Sanskrit word which means dedicating one's body and mind to God. When we do worship, we say karanyasa, the hands, they do not belong to me, they belong to whichever God we are worshipping. Anganyasa, various parts of the body, if you observe during the puja time, you will see I am touching various parts of my body. Have you observed that? What am I doing? There is a mantra. And the mantra says that this hand is not your hand. This heart is not your heart. This head is not your head. The whole body belongs to God, to you, Ramakrishna or whatever. Sannyasa means total, complete dedication of one's life to God. A monk has no other duty excepting to think about God, to live a godly life, and to inspire others also to lead a godly life. Nothing else. But if he doesn't do it, then something pricks. So, how do we know what is our duty? All are not monks, not necessary. But every devotee, even a devotee, is also a monk. But he or she is mentally, he is supposed to have dedicated his or her life to God. Externally, the circumstances are, may be married, may be householder, may have to go and work, or may even have to take part in killing. If he is military, one has to do one's duty. But the point is that what is duty? Duty is that which is our most natural expression, and we should never suppress it. For example, if you feel hungry, what is your duty? It is to eat. If you suppress that, then you are not doing it. It harms us in some way. This is only the grossest example of what I am trying to talk. But there are many things mentally to lead an immoral life. Is very bad. Why is it bad? It is not bad because it is condemned by society. Society can condemn many things, even good things it can condemn. Do you know that? Supposing a fanatical society, there is a liberal person, he is trying to be liberal. Do you know what would be the punishment? His head would be chopped off. Suppose a fanatical Muslim, he says, Hinduism is fine, Christianity is fine, so let them also worship. I will also worship Ramakrishna. Do you know what they will do? It's more likelihood that his head will be chopped off. So, not what society thinks, but what we know in our heart of hearts. If we do not do our duty, in some way, it pulls us down. So, that is one way of finding out duty. But this finding out has been covered by so many layers, by tradition, by birth, by language, by the caste in which we are born, by the education we get, that it is very, very difficult. Swami Vivekananda was telling you, he went to America, and in the beginning he was roaming about the Chicago exhibition, and he was quaintly dressed. Our Indian people are very peculiar people. They gave him such a good send-off with pure silk cloths, knowing that winter is going to come. How does the silk cloth, it looks very nice. In Rajasthan, silk cloth is very nice because it is a very hot place. But in Chicago, if you put on just silk cloth and nothing else, it would be terrible. Anyway, Swamiji was walking in the exhibition, somebody pulled him from behind. Swamiji turned back and said, "Excuse me, why are you pulling me back?" The man who was doing it, he was embarrassed. He thought this is a heathen and he doesn't know the English language. He has dressed himself in a quaint way and he is behaving in a peculiar way. Now you may think, that is dressing in a peculiar way, quaint way, does it to draw attention? Nowadays it is a fashion to dress in a quaint way. A girl, young girl, wanted to buy a dress. Went to a shop with her mom. So the girl selected some dress which she thought was good. Then she went inside to try it on. Put it on, came out, and asked mom, "How does it look?" Mom said, "Beautiful." Immediately the girl said, then it is not coal. It's not coal. Why? Because mom has approved. If she had said it is horrible, yes, it is very cool. So nowadays, you know, all sorts of shaven-headed orange cloth has become very common fashion nowadays. So, but in those days, people used to have to go according to the society's dictates. So this man was terribly embarrassed. Oh, you can speak English? Yes, I can. As though only those who can speak English, they are perfect gentlemen. But this is Swamiji was quoting this example in this chapter, and he is telling how we misjudge other people if they do not speak our language, if they do not eat our food, you know, very peculiar thing. I am from South India, and first time I went to Bengal, and I saw their people eating. And while eating, you know, this tumbler water, so they will be eating with the right hand and drinking water with the right hand. The whole glass is smeared with all this rice and dal and other things. It was such a horrible sight for me. I was thinking, what type of people are these? They are uncultured people. You know how South Indians drink even the hottest coffee? Orthodox, very orthodox people, at the tumbler should not touch the lips, though they put it 6 inches above the lips and then pour it. Even if, of course, they get accustomed to it. I'm telling extreme cases. But you know how we misjudge people. But what is the idea of drinking water with the right hand? Use one hand for all your eating, drinking. Keep the other hand clean, so that, you know, if you want to take something, it will be clean. You can hand it over something to somebody else. That is probably that is the idea. But how we misjudge things. So when we have to fulfill our duties, not only should we fulfill our duties, but we should also not criticize other people. I will come to that point a little later. So, to give an objective definition of duty is almost impossible. But the easiest way is that which always makes us feel well, lifts us up, takes us towards God. And how do we know something is taking us towards God? That's a wonderful point Swamiji raises. Supposing there is a terrorist who has been raised in an environment where to go and kill others is their sacred duty. And if others do not kill, then they are derelicting their duty, neglecting their duties. How do we know that? How do we know that we are going towards God? A man who kills others because he has been taught to do it, he feels, oh, I have done my duty very well. Allah is very great. No. There must be an objective test too, not merely subjective. Every objective type of performance or interaction must bring about a corresponding change in the subjective side. What is that? So first of all, we must feel completely fulfilled. But what is the test? The test is, do not injure anyone. Let no one be harmed by words or deeds or looks or by whatever. We can condemn people even by looks. Do you know that? By very sometimes the cruelest act of taking revenge is not to curse, not to beat, not to do any other type of harm, but sheer negligence. Neglect the person. As though the person doesn't exist. Do you know that? You know, if you are looking at that person as though looking daggers, if the other person knows, at least this person is looking at him. No, as though this earthworm doesn't exist at all. Neglect it. And many people cannot take it. And we do it very often, even unconsciously. And the consequences are not very good. So, duties are, there are various types of duties. essentially, according to Vedanta, there are two types of duties. They are called Varna Ashrama Dharma. I will come to that. I will expand these two into three categories: personal, family, and social. Each one of us have got these three duties. First, let us define it according to the what is personal duty. Personal duties fall again into two categories according to our age, duty according to our age, and duty according to our position in life. Let me give you an illustration. A child of 5 years, do you expect him and to do something very great? You know, is very interesting, you know. There was a mother, and she was going in America. She was wandering with her daughter. The daughter was only 6 years old, 5 or 6 years old. And in the airport, the mother had to go to toilet. So she had, you know, her handbag. And ladies are very convenient people, according to me. You know, all their tickets and passports and credit cards, everything they will keep in the handbag. All that the pickpocket has to do is just snatch it and go it away. So this mother had handed over this handbag to the daughter and say, "You please look after it until I come back." You know, after a few minutes, the mother came back, and then she also forgot that she has given. She was thinking the daughter is very carefully holding on the handbag, and then came out to the baggage claim, and then suddenly the mother remembered. Because she remembered, because she had to pay some money for the luggage. Then she wanted the handbag. She asked the daughter, "Where is the handbag?" The daughter said, "I don't know." Now the mother got very angry. Anyway, they had run back to where they had got down, and then the thanks to terrorists, the handbag is still lying there. Because there was a board, you know, "Do not touch anybody's thing, there may be a bomb." Thank God that it was lying there. Now the point I'm trying, how do you expect a 5-year-old child to be so careful? How does the child know? From the adult's point of view, the handbag is very important. But from the child's point of view, you know, she is restless. She just moves here and there, plays here and there. So we many times we when a child becomes a little bit, you know, mischievous, then we say, "Don't you understand?" The mother goes on, "Hari, who will she understand? Do you understand your duty?" No, it is irrational to expect. Same thing happens if there is a mad person, irrational person, insane person, abnormal person. Then does not this person understand? No, she doesn't understand. That is why she is abnormal. He or she is abnormal. We have to put up with it. We have to do what best we can do without getting irritated. That is our duty, because you cannot expect them to do it. So personal duty means at any particular age, if I am 5 years old, I have certain duties to do. If I am 15 years old, then I have to do some other duties. If I am 60 years old, then I have some other duties to do. Sri Ramakrishna once, he saw a Brahmin who was more than 60 years old playing cards. He got very annoyed and said, "Don't you think it is time for you to think about God? Is it the duty of this Brahmin, 60 years old man, to play cards?" No. If a 60 years old man behaves like a 20 years young man, then he is derelicting his duty. And if a 20 years old man, you know, grave and only talks about God and all those things, sometimes that is also dereliction of duty. This is according to age. Then according to condition of the health, a sick person cannot be expected to get up and take bath and do things. Unfortunately, there are so many superstitious people that even if, you know, the doctor forbids them to take bath, they will have to go and take bath. Superstition. And there are people who do not do what they are supposed to do and do what they are not supposed to do. So according to the age, according to the position, duties vary. We have to be commonsensical about it. This is from the point of age. Then from the point of a position. Position means mainly according to Vedanta, there are four positions. The student life, the householder's life, the vanaprastha retired, semi-retired life, and the monk's life. Nowadays, you find only three types of life. The student's life, the householder's life, and the monk's life. There is no in-between retired people. It is the modern retirement is like Indian ministers resigning. You know what? Whenever there is some allegation against them, they resign. You know what it means? Re-sign. They say, we are sorry. And they re-sign that we are accepting it with great regret. They themselves prepare the resignation letter also. So, according to these three stages, a student's duty is to grow well, to absorb all the knowledge, and then to be prepared to take up responsibility. What is the point of a student's life? Again, we have forgotten. As we understand it nowadays, a student must study. Academic knowledge he must acquire. No, that is necessary, but that is not the duty. The duty is to know about life, to develop his character, so that he would be prepared to be responsible. Responsibility is what one has to learn. So when the student gets married, he enters into this second stage of life, and that is when he has to take up responsibility. Looking after his parents, looking after the society and family and children and all those things. He must be very responsible. And a monk is even more responsible. Holy Mother used to say, you know, a monk's life is like a pure white cloth. Even the slightest stain, immediately it gets highlighted. If a monk does anything bad, it is extremely bad. It is, of course, personally bad. That is not as important as the social evilness. What is social? Because a whole society looks upon a monk as an ideal. He is what they should become, what they ought to become in future. That is why a monk is not an individual. He belongs to the whole world, and the whole world maintains a monk. So it is so incumbent upon him to lead a good life. He may have desires, he may have weaknesses, but in public he should do what is absolutely necessary. And if a monk really leads that kind of life, he is 50% free. Sri Ramakrishna had such great respect for monks. He used to say, even if a monk doesn't progress in spiritual life, but if he leads a good monk's life, doesn't do anything bad, 50% he is free. It is absolutely true. Because, you know, there is no wife, there are no children, but it is not easy. People from outside think, oh, it is so easy, you just put on some ochre cloth and then others provide him food and it is so very easy to, you know, you try. Even people cannot stay in the Vedanta center for a long time. How many times I see it, you know, people want to come and stay here. And we have a simple rule, get up and come to the shrine at 5:30 and also participate in the puja time, worship time, and in the evening arati, and meditate a little bit, just for half an hour. But many people cannot even do that. It's not so easy to become a monk. A monk means he should completely cut off all relationships. You must understand that a monk doesn't fall straight from the sky. He comes from a family background, a loving mother, a loving father, loving brothers, loving sisters. It is tremendous love is there. He had given up all those and he has come. He is struggling. Sometimes it is too much to expect from him. We expect too much from such a person. That is why Sri Ramakrishna used to say, a monk, even if he is not doing too much spiritual practice, but he is leading a good life, not doing anything blameworthy, he is far advanced in spiritual life. There was a great soul called Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He used to say, every monk is on the way to liberation. And to inculcate respect for the monks, one day, you know what he did? A donkey was passing by. Then he threw some ochre cloth on the donkey and prostrated, body and all, to show to people how sacred is this life. If you think this is a cock and bull story, there is an incident in the life of Holy Mother. You know, Holy Mother used to live with women. One day, a brahmachari was doing something near her. A novice was doing something near her. A novice is one who is preparing to be a monk. And one of the householder ladies, she was passing by, and out of, you know, not negligence exactly, but carelessness, her sari brushed against the novice. Immediately, Holy Mother, you know, she is very observant, and she called her and said, touch the feet of this boy and take the dust off his feet, because he is not an ordinary boy. He is going to be, say, a monk in future. You should be very careful how you behave with monks. Now, you know, the funny part of this incident is, the woman whose sari touched him was a well-known devotee of Sri Ramakrishna, a very elderly woman, the householder woman, and this novice himself was feeling embarrassed. Of course, the novice knows what is his worth. He is just a boy that has joined. So he was feeling embarrassed at mother's words. No, no, mother, why should you touch my feet? I should touch your feet. But what was Holy Mother trying to teach us? She is teaching us respect for the ideal. You know, when you touch a monk's feet, never mistake that, oh, I am touching Swami so and so. No, you are respecting the future ideal, so that there will be a great attraction for you in future when you are ready for that ideal. That is the whole idea. Anyway, so a monk should behave in his own way. He should never behave like a householder or like a child. This is the what is called personal ashrama dharma, personal duty. Now, there is another point here. Irrespective of what we are, we have one personal duty, and that is towards our person. Personal duty means duty towards our own person. What does it mean? It means it is our sacred duty to keep our body in good health. It's our sacred duty to be happy, to be fulfilled, to have a meaning in life. And most importantly, the one and only duty of every human being is to realize his or her own true nature, God realization. Sri Ramakrishna, in his own simple way, he tells, what is the goal of life? It is to develop love for the divine. That is the one duty of life. Every other duty is only to serve that particular duty. A student learns all his knowledge because that will prepare him to go to God. A householder, he takes responsibility of married life because that should take him towards God. A monk renounces the world because that would take him towards God. Ultimately, every one of us, only duty is to realize God. There is no other thing. So, this is what Swami Vivekananda is telling. Objective definition of duty is very impossible. Still, there are objective circumstances. As I was mentioning, this is the personal duty. Then family duty. How many conflicts come in the family because family is neglected? Maybe the husband is too busy earning money or too much interested in not coming home, not spending enough time with his wife and with his children, that is a negligence. He should not be there. I am not saying that there are on the other side, other extreme, people try to spend all their time with their families because of what we call moha. No, there is a duty towards the family. Suppose a good wife, Sri Ramakrishna says, she must be maintained. Children must be well educated. They must be given good food, good clothing. Parents must sacrifice everything to give the best chance for their children to grow up. That is their sacred duty. But it is not your duty to earn 10 million pounds and put it in the bank for the future welfare of your children. Sri Ramakrishna used it very, very clear about it. You know, it is the householders should be like birds. What is the birds? As soon as the young ones grow up, what do the parents do? Kick them out. I mean, not literally kick them out. What it means is, your duty parents as parents is to see that they are well educated and to see that they stand on their own feet. Of course, some people take 80 years to stand on their own feet. So we see this very clearly in the life of Sri Ramakrishna. There was one character called Pratap Chandra Hajra, and he was a married man. He neglected his wife and children, and there were debts also, and he comes to Dakshineswar and doing gudi-gudi japa. Sri Ramakrishna, how many times he scolded him, "You are a householder and you have wife, who is going to look after your children? Do you think the neighbors are going to look after your children? Go and look after them." Of course, he didn't listen at that time. Later on, he went back to his home. And Sri Ramakrishna was a married person. You know that. You know, even though he was a monk, he had nothing to do. He forgetful of his body. He had to remember that he had a body. Yet he kept it in his mind, "I have a wife, and who is going to look after?" Funny things happen, you know. One day, he called Holy Mother and said, "How many chapatis do you eat?" The idea is, you know, well, morning 3 chapatis and evening 6 chapatis. 6 into 360. And how many years she might be able to live. Some kind of rough calculation he made and said, "This much money if you have." But he is being a poor businessman. He didn't know anything about inflation. But he was so much careful to do his duties. You know what brings me so much of meaning in Sri Ramakrishna's life? When Sri Ramakrishna was married and he didn't have that much of money at that time, so he had to borrow, his mother had to borrow some jewels for decorating the bride who came to the house. And Sri Ramakrishna at night, you know, adroitly removed all the jewels and then returned them back. Next morning, this poor girl got up and started crying, "Where are my jewels?" So then Thakur's mother told her, "My child, do not weep. When you grow up, Gadai will provide you with all the jewels." That word of the mother, Sri Ramakrishna remembered, and in later days he got some jewelry done specially for Holy Mother, so that mother's words could be fulfilled. Another incident in this, you know, when Swami Vivekananda Narendra was a young man, he fell sick. So his mother took a vow at Kali temple that he will make him roll round the temple with naked body. And she neglected to tell him. He became all right. Neglected to tell him. And so he became a monk and he returned back from America. Then she one day casually mentioned, "My son, I had taken this vow, but I never got it fulfilled." You know, this world-renowned Swami, immediately after a few days, he went to Kali temple and stripped himself naked and then rolled 3 times around the big Kali temple. There was no need for him, but it is just to fulfill his mother's words so that they would not be lies. That is the duty. So Swami Vivekananda, he always used to say that one can rise above the duty only through the performance of the duty. Wherever, whatever our age, whatever our position, that's our duty to do it. And duty is not very easy. Duty means there is what is called friction. The very word duty means friction. What are you doing tomorrow? Tomorrow, unfortunately, I am on call. But our devotees are very clever, you know. When I have asked them to come here for some purpose, immediately their duty comes to their aid. So, duty always means it is a friction. Why is it a friction? Because the lower mind and the upper mind, duty means we have to do some things. And you know, it is human nature. Man doesn't want to be forced to do something. I will give you an example. A psychologist had made this observation that every man gets fulfilled only when he does something out of his own free will, but not as a bounden duty. He gives two examples. Suppose there is a factory worker, and factories in those days used to close in Saturdays afternoon, only half day Saturday, not like this today, whole Saturday is holiday. So supposing lot of work is to be done, and the manager calls the worker and says that lot of extra work has come, we will pay you extra, but you will have to work even until evening. This man, factory worker, refuses to do. He grumbles, "Oh, whole week I have been slaving like a donkey, I don't want to do this." So what can the manager do? It is a free choice. So this worker refuses to work, goes home, and then takes a huge backpack and starts climbing a mountain. Which is more strenuous, to do the factory work or to take up a backpack and then climb the mountain? Which is more strenuous? But he does it very joyfully, because it is his will, it is his freedom, he wants to do that. Another example also, you see, there is a dog lying under a tree, tied by a chain. The owner tied it, and it is growling and moving restlessly here and there. So the owner thinks, the poor dog, it wants to go somewhere else. So it removes the chain. Now you go where you want. What does the dog do? Lie down under the tree, aram se baith ke. It is doing exactly the same thing. But now it is very happy. It is not growling. Why? Because it is lying down out of its own free will. You know, human nature is that we do not want to do any duty, not because it is not good, it may be even most wonderful, but the lower impulses often hinder us. There are two main obstacles why this friction comes when we are supposed to discharge our duties. One is because we are bound. We are not doing it out of freedom. You know, so many doctors, they feel like doing service to people, and they go to Africa or India, you know, 3 months, 6 months, and they work very hard. They don't feel bad about it. They feel fulfilled. They feel very happy. But the same doctors, if you know, somebody says that, "Will you take up my duties for one?" "Oh, whole week I am working like this." Why? Because the other work they are doing out of their own freedom. So freedom is an important element in the discharge of our duties with love. Second difficulty why duty brings friction out is, duty always means suppressing the lower desires. Suppressing laziness, suppressing lower desires. You know, a student has to study. What is his lower nature? He wants to go to cinemas. He wants to read novels. He wants to chit-chat and gossip. He wants to do all this, or play some games, or send messages, SM messages. "How are you? How are you?" Every 2 minutes, "How are you? How are you?" What is his duty? he has to study, but study is not that easy, you know. Sometimes it is very difficult. So there is a natural friction. Similarly, what is the duty of a devotee? He has to develop love for God. So what does it mean? It means you should not love anything else, collect all the love from everything else and redirect it towards God. But it's not that easy, because worldly things, you know, we have been accustomed to these worldly things for many, many lives. Therefore, they pull us. Why do you want to love God? There is your wife, there are your children, there are your friends. And sometimes it is said, you know, a man would cannot live even without his enemies. If nobody else is there, at least some enemies are better. I can see through the window out. An old man came from India. Very funny incident. And you know, this is his children are here and they are looking after him very well. But only thing is, whole day they are out. This old man, he feels so lonely, so horrible to spend his time. So after 2-3 months, he became mad and refused to stay here. Then I came to know that, you know, his whole neighbors are very troublesome neighbors. They insult him and then they do not come to his help. They do not want to talk to him. He is more than happy to go and live with them than to live in such a heavenly place, but without any company. It is very difficult for us to overcome the lower impulses. So these are the two important things. What is we must try to overcome our lower impulses. Then only duty becomes a welcome thing for us to do. Second, we must always understand, nobody is forcing us to do things. A duty is something which helps us to express our divine nature, to manifest our true nature. I'll give an example. Suppose somebody is sick and the doctor prescribes very bitter medicine. Does anybody like bitter medicine? That's why many prefer homeopathic medicines. Bitter medicine is not preferable to anybody, but then it is his duty. Why is it his duty? Because it helps him manifest his health. Then he can enjoy life. But before he could have health, he has to love this medicine. So that is why, you know, there is a very funny incident. Holy Mother was sick at Jayarambati. And so the doctor, and it was very hot. It was very hot. And somebody told Mother, you are suffering from this heat. Every day afternoon, 4 o'clock, you take the sharbat made out of sugar candy. And it's a very tasty drink, very cooling and tasty drink. At 4 o'clock, somebody used to prepare a tumbler and come and give it to her. And at 4 o'clock, all the devotees, Mother, we want some prasad. And by the time she has, you know, Mother, she, by the time she has given prasad, hardly anything was left out. So this went on for a few days. And after a few days, she became sick. A doctor prescribed barley water at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And somebody prepared the barley water. And Mother was waiting for her children, for prasadam, to give prasad. Nobody was coming. Everybody came to know that day, there was no sugar candy, sharbat, only barley water. And nobody came. So Mother was puzzled. Where are my children for prasadam? So, we are also mentally sick. Physically also we are sick. You know, it is so important for us to diet, to do exercise. To do exercise is a friction. It takes a lot of willpower to do it, is it not? That's why we seek company, you know, play tennis, it's a very pleasant game, or go for swimming. But if you are asked to sit and do your exercise, it is very difficult. That is when the television, you know, some nice young lady will come and come on, put up your hands, and it's very nice. We need a lot of moral support for doing all this kind, or Ramdev asking yoga, Astha temple, channel. So duty is seldom sweet, because it because of these two things. One, we have not yet learned that it is to express our own higher nature. Secondly, because of long ingrained lower impulses. Duty really means these two things. We must know how to do our duty out of free will, not because somebody is imposing it. And one of the main ingredients of this duty is to overcome the lower impulses. So subjectively, whatever helps us to rise from a lower state of mind to a higher state, and also from a state of bondage to a state of freedom, that is duty. One of the most important results of performing our duty is we gain gradually more and more of freedom. Freedom is our true nature. A duty, proper discharge of duty, leads to the more and more freedom. So that is what Swamiji is telling. This, from the subjective standpoint, we may see that certain acts have a tendency to exalt and ennoble us, while certain other acts have a tendency to degrade and to brutalize us. So any action that makes us go Godward is a good action and is our duty. And any action that makes us go downward is evil and is not our duty. Again, as I said, on the objective side, outside, how do we know what is our duty? I remember a Jewish story. There was a man who went to a famous rabbi and asked him, you see, there's lots of confusing books, scriptures on Judaism. I have no time. You teach me Judaism while standing on one leg. That means, you know, when a man is walking, he puts one step on the ground and he lifts another step and then puts it down before lifting the other leg. So you must teach me the essence of Judaism before one leg lifts off and again falls on the ground. A rabbi was a very wise man. He said, I will teach you. So he lifted his leg and then he said, do not do unto others what you do not wish others to do to you. The rest is commentary. And do unto others what you wish others to do it to you. If you analyze this, what is it that we want others for us? There is only one thing that we want others to do to us. You know what is it? Let others love me. If others love me, they will never injure. It covers all the good qualities. If you want others to love you, what is your duty? To love others. Develop that love for others. This is the essence of the whole scripture. Not only Judaism, in Hinduism, Swami Vivekananda says, there is a Sanskrit aphorism which runs thus, do not injure any being, ahimso paramo dharmaha. Not injuring any being is virtue. Injuring any being is sin. This is the objective test of any duty. What a marvelous statement Swami Vivekananda is making here. How do we know we are performing our duties? This is one objective test. If our duty does any brings injury or pain to other creatures, then there is something simply wrong. Of course, this statement is not that easy to understand. A soldier trying to shoot a gun or throw a bomb because they are injuring our country, do you call it injuring the others? No. Again, you will have to understand that which brings the greater good. Something can be a lower thing or a smaller thing can be sacrificed for the good of a larger whole or a higher objective. I will give an example. So M was the chronicler of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, and his wife used to complain against him. You are spending so much time with Sri Ramakrishna and I am your wife, you are not paying enough attention towards me, so I will commit suicide if you continue to do this. Now Yam was worried because she might do that. So he came and complained to Sri Ramakrishna, what shall I do? Sri Ramakrishna told him, look, for the sake of God, anything can be done. If an ungodly wife wants to commit suicide, the same thing applies to ungodly husbands too, don't worry. Then let them commit suicide, it's not a sin. It would be a sin if you are cheating her, or if you are trying to neglect her for worldly reasons. But if you are doing it for the love of God, it is permissible. Anything is permissible for a higher purpose. It doesn't really matter. So, this is a most wonderful objective test, that those who perform their duty, or those who perform duties really well, two things will happen. First, they do the greatest good to others. Let me put it in a positive way. Their duties only help others, never degrade others. And they also help the person himself to go towards God. That is the only way. Therefore, the one point we ought to remember is that we should always try to see the duty of others through their own eyes, and never judge the customs of other peoples by our own standard. But at the same time, we should see that everyone is progressing towards God. So if somebody has dressed quaintly or behaving in a way that we are not accustomed to look, do not judge, do not try to rush to criticize the person. See whether that is helping you and that is helping the other people too. That is one way of looking in a good way towards other people. While we are discharging our duties, sometimes friction comes because we think we deserve more than the others deserve. For example, supposing two people have passed an examination, two students, and both of them are applying for the same job. One of them would get the job. The other one would think, am I anyway less? Why did he get? Why did not I get? Swami Vivekananda is telling a beautiful thing here, that no man can occupy satisfactorily a position for which he is not fit. There is no use in grumbling against nature's adjustment. Many years back, when I was in India, as you know, I am very much interested in psychology. I used to read a lot of books. There was one book, suddenly it fell into my hands. You know from whom? Swami Atmasthananda. He came to Bangalore. And I asked him, would you lend the book to me? And he refused to do it. So I stole the book for the night and read it and then returned it to him without his knowledge. The name of the book is Peter's Principle. What is Peter's Principle? That no man, any man would go on rising in his position until he reaches a position for which he becomes unfit. And thereafter, he just stays there. You know, a clerk becomes a head clerk, then a manager, then a vice president or something like that. He goes on rising. As long as he has the capacity, he goes on getting promotions. And once he reaches a position after which, you know, others would do not think he is fit, he just remains there. This is what Swami Vivekananda is telling. This is the pure law of karma, which means we get what we deserve. This is called kapala, or fate, or luck. There is no injustice in this world. Nobody gets anything. You cannot get anything by force. You know, your uncle may be a minister and you may get a higher position. But you may think, but others know how unfit you are. There is an Indian joke, you know. One UP bhaiya, an illiterate fellow in India, anybody can become a minister. So because of corruption, and if they are robbers, if they are cinema actors, film actors, they become ministers and prime ministers and chief ministers and all that. So one UP bhaiya, he had become a minister. As soon as he became minister, he got a car. and a chauffeur. So first day, a chauffeur was taking him. So this man, this minister, he thought, I am a minister, I can do anything, I can drive the car also. So he commanded his driver, get out and sit in the back seat, I will be driving the car. So the driver got out, but stood on the platform, not in the car. The minister got very angry, I told you to sit in the back seat. The driver folded his hands and said, Saab, ये कार है कार सरकार नहीं जो कोई भी चला सकता है सर दिस इज ए कार नॉट गवर्नमेंट एनीबडी कैन रन दिस वर्ड यू नो इट राइम्स इन हिंदी लैंग्वेज वेरी नाइसली सो द आइडिया इज इफ वी हैव डन enough training, if we have done proper karma or actions, those the results of those actions are inevitable. No power on earth can take anything away from us. If this is true, and it is true, but if it is true, there is no need for competition, there is no need for jealousy, there is no need to feel envious or try to put down others. Somebody is born very beautifully. Somebody is born as well talented musicians. Somebody is born with natural ability for administration. Different people have different talents. They deserve it. They have not simply got it, you know, just as a gift. They had worked for it. But this needs to a belief in past births. Otherwise, how would you explain the genius of Mozart? How would you explain the greatness of Jesus Christ? He was born, after all, you know, to an ordinary carpenter parents. You cannot explain many people having wonderful talent. You know, there is one girl, and I admire her. She's 10 or 12 years old now. You know, what a determined person from the very beginning. She has discipline. She gets up early in the morning. She sits for meditation or japa or prayer. And she studies. Nobody need tell. The parents need not force her. She does it all on her own. But her own elder sister, every day the parents have to poke her. Come on, get up. Come on, go to the shrine. Come on, you study. Why this difference? Past births. That is what at least Hindus say. Coming back to our subject, that our law, the law of karma says, whatever we do, the results are inevitable. Good, good, bad, bad, none escape the law. This is what Swami Vivekananda says. It's absolutely true. If this is true, what is our duty? Our duty is to do that kind of karma so that we may deserve physical health, mental health, and spiritual well-being. This is our duty. So, duty means that which takes us towards God. Why is it? Because it is not something forced, but it is that which is our natural, real nature, and we have to express. And that through that alone lies our freedom. And duty is always painful. That's why we must have some love. Unless love greases the wheels of duty, it won't run smoothly, Swami Vivekananda says. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.